Now we go. Hey guys, this is Ronnie Fernandez. I'm here with Eugene Dura. And I want to give Eugene an opportunity to go ahead and introduce himself. Go ahead, Eugene.
Got it. Yeah. So I'm Eugene Dura. I am a licensed clinical social worker. Ronnie and I attended USC School of Social Work together way back when. Now it feels like a long time ago, but not that long ago. And I currently work in Northern California in the North Bay, Solano County. I work as our MHSA clinical supervisor, overseeing contracts, as well as supporting some of our programs that receive MHSA funding, which is from Proposition 63. It's like a millionaire tax on how each county receives funding to better support predominantly our underserved populations and high needs populations. So our FSP, our homeless populations, as well as ethnically and diverse populations that are underserved and vulnerable and experience a lot of disparities as they navigate through our systems of care and really in life overall. In addition, I also serve as our ethnic services coordinator. In that role, I kind of lead our culturally responsive efforts in terms of our strategies for ways that we as a system address those particular disparities. And then part-time, I work for Sac State in the School of Social Work, teaching a course in human diversity and social justice. So that's a little bit about me, but I'm also a father, a husband, a son, a brother, an uncle, and just a person striving to do the best I can, you know, with what I can. So that's a little bit about who I am.
Yeah. I mean, we met at SC, you definitely, you know, stuck out. You know what I mean? Just being able to you rep Compton hard, bro.
I have to. Even though I'm far away, I still have to, man.
And just, you know, what you were doing in your community. And, you know, I think with social work, sometimes we get caught up in the academic part and the theories and stuff. But when you're able to have both of them, you know, that experience of like living, you know, living in an area like Compton and then me living in an area like UCLA, there's definitely things that kind of bring us together. It's like, hey, man, we kind of see the same thing. Yep. And so I think that's why we kind of clicked it, you know, hit it off pretty well. Yeah. And just because we understand that this is hard.
Yeah, it is.
So I wanted to you know, just to talk on how you were able to overcome that. You know, I mean, statistically, you know, saying we shouldn't be here, right? I mean, we shouldn't.
Yeah.
And so I think we need to take our challenges and really see how they benefit us later on in life. You know, and what you said about, like, you know, professionally, as a father, as a husband, and balancing this, you know, this crazy time, you know. So let's start at the beginning, man. You were raised in Compton. Tell me about that, man.
You know, to be honest with you, I have so many different types of memories, you know, growing up. You know, a lot of good, you know, a lot of bad, you know, just in terms of different things that are happening in my environment growing up. So I grew up on the west side of Compton, near Rosecrans and Central. I was born and raised on 139th Street, but I moved around a lot, but pretty much all in the same area. So like, you know, typically people move, they, you know, all right, I moved from, you know, Compton to Lancaster, or you know what I mean, or from California to Nevada. You know, I kind of moved from, you know, 139th to El Segundo, which is right down the street, to, you know, Stanford, you know, around the corner, and then literally down the street to another house, you know, and that's kind of gives you some insight in terms of, like, I just really stayed in that area, even when moving. But I grew up in a single parent household. My parents divorced when I was young, when I might have been maybe in second or third grade or so. When my parents split up, my mother and my second to oldest brother, Lamel, who owns this company, Compton Vegan, we actually moved to Ujima Village, which is it right at Magic Johnson Park on El Segundo in Central. And while living in Ujima Village, we actually were like sleeping on the floor. You know, I didn't have anything, nothing to go inside the house. All I remember having was like a toy fire truck. That gives you insight and not knowing then, but reflecting on it now, give you insight in terms of how hard it must have been for my mother, during that time. Some of my earliest childhood memories, start with things like that, being at festivals or carnivals, like in empty lots, abandoned lots that don't have pretty much nothing in it but some trash and graffiti, where they used to set up carnivals and stuff. And it, right before it was a Rite Aid over where it is now, Rosecrans and Central, it actually wasn't anything. And with the carnival happening, like literally my first memory was like gunshots happening, being shot out, and my mom carrying me and my cousin Wayne in her arms, running back because I stayed across the street. Yeah. And then, actually talking to my brother until recently, I didn't even remember this, as again, I was a child, but my brother said, actually, it started off by me being stuck on a ride while this was happening. And I didn't even recall that. That gives you insight in terms of some of the, hardships, navigating, was always having to be aware of, threats of violence, right? Both from people who look like me as well as people who don't. I actually posted this on Twitter the other day, but, I actually been at gunpoint from Black gangs, Latino gangs, and white gangs, but the only difference is, one group got paid to do it, And that kind of, and when I reference white gangs, I'm referencing really more so the police, at the time, growing up. I got a laundry list of things that I could get into.
Yeah.
Some of the positive things I would like to highlight is, the richness of the community, in terms of people supporting one another, looking out for each other, having great neighbors, knowing your neighbor, borrowing cups of sugar from your neighbor, playing in your neighbor's backyard, taking some wood that somebody was putting on top of their trash can to use as a ramp for your scooter, and them getting hot because you was using their wood. And just overall, man, just overall community, support and love.
What did that teach you? You hear me? Like coming from humble beginnings and being, the examples that you share, how did it help shape you?
It really shapes who I am. It's what I look for now. Elements that I grew up in, I try to look for now in community and try to exemplify, in terms of, the role models that I saw, and then also good and bad, right? So one of the lessons I learned in my household that my mom reiterated all the time, even my older brothers, which I was very fortunate to have, two older brothers that, went on and went to college, which gave, a young man like myself, surrounded by a lot of people, didn't have that same example.
That's a huge deal, man.
Whole lot of confidence, I always thought, like, man, if they went to college, and that ended up being the only school I applied to. But my mom and brothers would always say, don't be like me, be better than me, So being the youngest, I actually had an advantage, particularly with their experiences that they had, so some of the stuff that they bumped their head on, I didn't have to experience the same thing. And I also include my older cousin, who's like a brother to me, who lived with us, and that kind of exemplifies that family that I talk about, taking, each other in as just that close-knit family. But, although he didn't go on to college, is somebody who, you know, with a high school diploma, was able to, you know, navigate, you know, gang banging and getting shot to making 100 racks a year. So I had really good examples of people who faced adversity, including my, you know, my mom, and, you know, and so other family members. And so to be able to kind of learn from their mistakes and really try to, you know, make an imprint on this life of my own, you know?
Yeah.
And so I try to use those examples, you know, to strive every day to be better. And so that's kind of what shaped me into who I am. In addition to my mom really being an advocate, in addition to being, you know, a leader and holding it down for our household after our parents divorced, you know, she, you know, really, you know, she worked at Martin Luther King Hospital for years, man, for over 20 years. And she always gave back. You know, she didn't graduate from college either, but, you know, she worked in social services departments and, you know, the front desk and helping people, you know, and she's always been, you know, community oriented, even writing her own books and, you know, holding, you know, facilitating poetry readings, you know, in the neighborhood and giving awards to young Black and brown men graduated from high school, signed by like letters signed by the mayors and the presidents and, you know, all kind of stuff, you know, that she would do with very little means, you know. And so all of those different kind of examples played a part in shaping and molding me to the person I am today.
Yeah. And those are one of my questions I'll ask you too. And I ask everybody is like, And I think when people try to come up and try to, like, you know, get to their goals that they have to do it themselves, but there's always people there to help you. You know, there's always people, like, you know, and I talked to, you know, a couple of guys and stuff, and it sometimes doesn't click right away. You know what I mean? But like the little words of wisdom, the little examples, they kind of stay with you. It's like, why am I still thinking about this stuff that, you know, that my dad said, you know, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
You know?
It comes ingrained into like who you are. It helps mold, which is the importance of like mentorship, which is, you know, like, you know, like what you, you started with, the son of Troy,
right? Yeah,
the sons of Troy, you know, while at SC, and just the value of that it is just really underrated and undervalued in our society.
No, it's a big deal, man. We need to go out there. I mean, especially people that come from, you know, I came from the East LA, Alhambra. Like I moved a lot too, you know. Yeah. Events.
All in LA too?
No, well, all LA County, but it was depend how we were doing economically, you know.
I literally was like moving stuff from, like, you know, from one house to the
No, we went to my grandmother, then Alhambra, then East LA, and we settled down in East LA and stuff. So yeah. it was a lot of moving, man. In Montebello, yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, man. It's a crazy journey, but I the importance of, you know, being out there, and like, I don't like doing this stuff, to be honest with you, man. I'd rather just watch people do it and stuff. I'm like, you know what? We're really a small minority, man. You know?
Yeah.
Of that, you know, that have, you know, are like a master's and above, you know? So I think we really have to be out there and try to be out there as much as we can.
Yeah.
But I wonder, you know, you were talking a little bit about the cops, right? I mean, we have a lot of that stuff going on now.
Yeah.
And it's getting, I mean, it's already been bad. And I don't know, man. I mean, where do we go from here? You know, where do we go?
You know, it's a question that, you know, I've been trying to, you know, answer and really, you know, get involved in different, you know, activities, even professions, you know, to help, you know, reduce and really eliminate these types of things from happening. You know, I actually, this morning, in all honesty, you know, I actually, you know, shed some tears listening to an interview, you know, of the sister of the man, Ahmaud, you know, and who was just recently, you know, for those who may not be aware, you know, was recently, you know, killed by, you know, a few white men who, you know, while jogging, you know, and it just, and one was a retired cop, I believe.
I think he was an investigator. I think.
Or something of that nature. Yeah. But just, you know, it's, and part of me shedding tears is for one, hearing the pain of the loss of a life, right?
Yeah.
Regardless, I think, you know, it doesn't help that, you know, this is also another, you know, Black life, you know, who, you know, and it does impact me, you know, and it's just senseless violence that seems to be a reoccurring thing throughout my life, honestly, you know, from, you know, people that I know very well to people I've never met before historically that happened prior to me being here, and to people, you know, just in, you know, nationally, you know, in other communities that, you know, definitely, you know, it's something that needs to stop, but for whatever reason has not stopped. And if anything, it's now become more highlighted, you know, than, you know, when I was even, you know, in high school with, you know, social media, right? At first it was just, you know, growing up, it was just my own experiences.
Now
I'm living my own experiences and then the vicarious trauma of, you know, others, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I don't know how. I think that's a, you know, $1 trillion question. You know,
it is. I remember talking about, because I had some run-ins, you know, as far as like being pulled over, and I've had guns drawn on my head by cops, and and it is. I mean, it messes you up, man.
It does. Especially, it does. Same here.
You know, I grew up thinking, you know, like, man, everybody's the same. Or, you know, I was a good kid. I played football.
Yeah.
Oh, but then when you get pulled over, and then in my experience, I mean, I had a cop follow me for miles down. Uh-huh. Coming out of my, you know, put my hands up. I look back, man, you just see a barrel like at my head.
Yeah.
You know, and then it was just a lot of, you know, it was weird because I felt like, what did I do wrong? I was just working, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, getting handcuffed and all that kind of stuff, and it's just like, up to a couple of years ago, I'm gonna say like 5-6 years ago, I had a really bad anxiety with police officers. I would just stutter, hands down, didn't want to.
And honestly, I still experience that. You know, when the police pull me over now, I honestly, like, I have my ID and my insurance already like pulled out along with my hands out the car, you know what I mean, like, I don't want to give you no reason. And then actually recently when I got pulled over, I feel like anytime like I go like a little bit over the speed limit, bro, they catch me. I get no passes, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'll be like, you hear about people getting passes, I have not got a pass. I'm still looking for that pass, bro.
Yeah.
But
it's
wild. And as you were mentioning, you know, like literally for no reason, like you saying that actually gave me chills, because it's like I had that exact experience, you know, like, and I'm sure we could trace stories, you know, back and forth. And I'm not sure we got the time to today, but, you know, which is unfortunate that we can have that many. But to give you a small glimpse, one time I was in a circle of like maybe like 3 or 4 Black men in my community, and they were older than me. I was the youngest, but I just was like, I just was curious. I always ask these type of questions ever since I was young, like, why are people poor? Why are these things happening?
Yeah.
So I kind of did
social work. That's why we got a social work. I asked the same questions, man.
So I asked everyone, I was like, you know what, just out of curiosity, how many times have y'all been pulled over before? Like, just out of, you know, curiosity. I had named at that time, I want to say like at least like 6 to 10 times.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody else started tallying. And in that like 3 to 4, you know, group of Black men, you know, different ages, but it was like over 100 times.
Yeah. I believe it, man. Yeah.
And I was blown away, man. You know, and back to that story that you mentioned that gave me chills is that same experience. Like I had a job interview at Food for Less on Rosecrans and Central. You know, I was the card attendant. Shout out to all the card attendants out there. So, to mop the floors, clean the bathrooms, all that stuff. So I'm on my way to a job interview for that job, right? You know, nothing wrong. It did help me, you know, get my little change, pocket change for the weekend and whatnot. But they pulled up. I literally took a shower, got in the car. I started the car. I'm in the driveway, by the way.
Yeah.
And as soon as I start the car, the sheriff's actually drove down the street, you know, and then burnt rubber in reverse. And then hopped out, pulled guns out on me, telling me to put my hands up. You know, and I'm handcuffed in front of the whole, like, everybody. I'll tell you about the community close-knit. Everybody on their porch, like, what's going on? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, he didn't even do nothing. And they, you know, playing good cop, bad cop. Essentially, they end up unhandcuffing me and telling me that I fit the description. They searched the car. I didn't know my warrant. I didn't know my rights. I knew that I didn't know that they couldn't come onto the property because I hadn't left the property.
Yeah.
I didn't know none of that, you know?
Yeah.
And I was on my way to a job interview. You know, I don't know how many people in, you know, Beverly Hills got the same story, you know?
Yeah. It's, and we, I think now it's kind of changed, but if you would tell these stories like 10 years ago, it's funny. Cause I'll get a look like, what? And then I did something wrong. Well, you had a shaved head. That's why.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, yeah. You don't understand. Like, you don't understand. Like at that time I had to shave my head. Like, you mean like there's no, like, they don't believe it. They didn't believe it at the time. You know what I mean? You tell these stories and it's just like, it was definitely a different response. Maybe like 10, 15 years ago where they didn't believe you. Nobody like, that doesn't happen. Yes, a cop maybe, you know, pull me over and maybe take off my shoes. Why? I don't know.
Like, I don't know, man.
I don't know. It was crazy. So I always had this kind of for a long time, man. But then I was like, you know what? I have to start getting over that anxiety. So, you know, they have different meetings here. Like, I live in Downey now, and there's a couple of programs where, you know, there's a lot of cops involved in these programs. So I'm like, I have to go. You know what I mean? Like, I have to go build relationships, talk to police officers to bring down that anxiety. And now it's down. You know, I talk a little bit more, you know. I still get, you know, like nervous and stuff talking to police officers. But it is, because it's so easy to get into that, like, that anger, that, like, you know what I mean? Like, you go down those rabbit holes that guys get into. And I always tell people, like, look, and if you have some sort of, you know, some sort of anger towards somebody or group of people, any group of people, you need to find the best part of them. You know what I mean? You need to find a
good group. And to me, actually, I like being exposed to, like, my pastor in Compton actually is a sheriff. And so Pastor Rafer Owens, for Faith Inspirational, in Compton. And so it's like being exposed to, you know, people like that, you know, who, you know, just had the best interest of the community, you know, aren't trigger happy folks, you know what I mean? Yeah. It kind of helps to be able to, you know, understand that there are other people, you know, good people, you know, who are in law enforcement. I think the challenge for me sometimes is, you know, understanding, you know, like the history, you know, how law enforcement came to be, right? You know, in terms of, you know, really, you know, their sole purpose at those times were to really, you know, kind of like the bounty hunters to get, you know, runaway slaves, you know, and this is kind of how the origins of kind of policing began. And then, you know, just the perpetual kind of cycle of violence that we see, you know, targeted, you know, to people who look like me. So I don't know if that anger honestly will ever leave. I have found better ways to cope with it. And then I also, you know, have done work to kind of try to help, you know, law enforcement with better understanding kind of, you know, the biases that we all carry just by existing in a society that is, you know, that feeds us narratives and stigmas and stereotypes about different groups of people that causes us to respond differently in our interactions, both from a doctor's perspective, to a clinician's perspective, to a police officer's perspective. Yeah. You know, it impacts us all. I mean, those are difficult conversations to have with
law. Man, they are. They are. I mean, I'm hoping one day we can have those conversations because, you know, it's important. You know, because I think that's where we're at right now, and it's hard for us to move forward. You know what I mean? And I think that's what the difficult part is. And I think once we start moving forward, something like this happens. You know what
I mean? It's I feel like, man, honestly, you know, it's just every year, bro. You know, and these are the folks that's nationally. You know, what about our folks that don't get national coverage? That it's kind of, at times, I mean, honestly, it definitely feels like an endless cycle, bro,
it does.
That, is just until we do some major, kind of changes, we'll unfortunately, still be here. It's become the norm, which is really unfortunate. You know, I don't think people have the same reaction to loss of life, I think in part of that, with this continually happening, you see the devaluing of, of Black lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because all you see is death.
Yeah.
And which is not a sign of hope.
Yeah.
Optimism,
And one of my biggest fears is that it's so with oppression, right? I mean, it's not so much people are keeping people of color down, like physically down, like all that.
Yeah.
It's more mental now. That's my perspective of it. Uh-huh. It's like people don't have to say anything. It's just it's already kind of ingrained in a lot of people's heads. Like you know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying. Yeah. I think that in regards to oppression, regarding like changing some of these inequities that we see, I think my opinion is that they were intentionally put in place, right? So when it comes to, when you think about certain aspects of like where we stand when it comes to income inequality, right? Mm-hmm. That didn't happen by choice, right? Sure. There were intentional policies and practices that went in place that actually manifested the disparities that we see now, right? And so I think in order to kind of change that, right? And I think the same could be said for other elements of like different forms of inequities, but in order to change that, I think we have to be as intentional, right? In terms of policies, practices, allocation of resources, as we were with causing them, if that makes sense. And I think that in itself is a changing, more of a revolution and really changing the systems in which kind of continue to exist that, perpetuates these in that,
Yeah, no, I definitely understand what you're saying. I do. I think the biggest battle is in ourselves too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I think even if we do all the policies that we want and everything like that, I mean, I still think there's been so much damage over the generations that we have to, I think start and end with us. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Of the way that we think of, Mexicans don't do that. Latinos don't do that. Black people don't do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then it's like, nobody said that. We're telling ourselves.
Yeah. No. That's true. I mean, it's definitely an aspect. Actually, it's this trainer and former professor actually at Syracuse. I believe I'm not sure. I don't remember where he currently teaches, but he actually came to do a training for us. His name is Ken Hardy. And since taking this training, it's caused me to speak more of my truth and also to think about some of the things that mentally, I was kind of enforcing myself or becoming, uncomfortable in certain situations. For example, the stereotype of like Black people eating, chicken and watermelon, right? Mm-hmm. So historically, there's an imagery to that, right? Very racist imagery. And that were used in, movies and commercials and things of that nature, right? And so growing up where I grew up, not around a lot of white people. The only white people actually that I kind of was around were like my teachers or the police.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. People in authority and never really as peers. Yeah. And then to now working in an environment where I am one of the only, you know, few, right. And then actually USC was one of my first examples of that as well. Yeah. But when it comes to like, I would intentionally not eat like watermelon or chicken. And he brought up this example in the training, you know, I would do that because I didn't want to be someone's stereotype of what a black male, I was conscious of that.
Oh yeah. We're glad. Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I'm sure the same could be said about other stereotypes for other cultural groups. Yep. Right.
Yeah.
But he mentioned how this guy at the beginning of a week in a training that he was doing, you know, mentioned that. And then at the end of the week, you know, amongst a group of white people actually brought a bucket of chicken and some watermelon and was eating it because he liked it, you know, like, yeah. and not really caring, because it's unhealthy for us to, you know, to navigate the world always conscious of what others might think.
Yes.
I definitely know there's a personal work that goes along with it, I think, but it's, we can't just ignore, you know, that there are systems in place, you know.
Oh, that's,
you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Oh, that, no, I think.
Outcomes.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. No, I'm not arguing with that at all. I'm not. But I think just kind of see how it is now, and how we're kind of bombarded of all the negative things that happen.
Yeah.
I feel that some people are losing hope in that. You know what I mean? You know, if I'm Latino or African American, like, what was that?
Those systems are meant, that's what they intended to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just kind of keeping that kind of like, you know, what can we do right now about it? You know what I mean? Like, what can we do? You know, how can we make ourselves, you know, have more opportunity, that kind of stuff, than just giving up and saying,
that's a fact. And that, I think that starts, you know, definitely improving our, you know, becoming more aware and educating ourselves on, you know, financial literacy, right? Yeah. Systems that we previously had no exposure to, right? You know, in terms of like being able to navigate, you know, these particular systems of, you know, retirement and 401s, you know, and then like just Roth IRAs accounts and things of that. And actually, another Nas gem, I shared one earlier, but he said, my father wasn't a banker, neither was my neighbor. When it came to getting paper, who the hell was going to train us? And I think that's, you know, we do have to educate ourselves on these different things, even the power of food and nutrition, right? Yeah. And what we're putting into our bodies that, you know, unfortunately, our areas are, you know, mostly dense with, you know, unhealthy food options, you know? Yeah. So in all the way around, we definitely have the information out there. I think it's on brothers like yourself and I, you know, to help, you know, make sure that everyone gets that information.
Yeah. And it's hard, man. Like we said earlier, we're fathers, husbands, workers, like we're just, you know, trying to, you know, make a living and, you know, try to do good things. But yeah, we definitely have to put, you know, I guess doing stuff like this and having those tough conversations, because we're, you know, I don't know too many two people that can have this kind of type of conversation. You know what I'm saying? Just like, okay, well, I think this and I think that, you know, like it's hard. And I think we definitely have to have some more of these, man, and talk about it.
I'm down for it, man. Yeah, we can have a part 2 and 3. You know, we got. I'm always down for these conversations, because I do think it's, but one, it's important to have, you know, it's healthy to have.
Yeah, I think it is.
You know, to be able to process some of the things that we're already thinking about, you know, and to do so amongst, you know, another brother, you know, is always good. You know, so I definitely appreciate, you know, you even reaching out to do this, man. So yeah, if you want to do another one, man, let me know.
Yeah, we have to, man. I think it's definitely, because, you know, I think right now we're just hearing, you know, the two extremes, you know what I'm saying? We're always hearing that, and we need something like a discussion, you know, nothing like a 15 minute bite of like, you know, this is happening and this, and then you just see, you know, just chaos. It's like, no, we need to have a discussion about like, what can we like realistically do, you know?
Yeah. And I think like today, you know, for me in ways that I'm an honor Ahmad, I'm actually planning to join the Mao jog, you know, today with, you know, I'm hoping millions of other people that are going out and running miles in honor of him.
Yeah.
And today would have been his 26th birthday, man. Wow. So that's one way that, you know, I would like to, you know, honor the young man. And then in addition to, you know, continue to put I'm fortunate to be in a career that every day I get opportunities to be a part of these discussions. Yeah. But and finding other ways as well. So
yeah, I think doing this helps, and definitely doing that, being, you know, positive and something that's going to take action. So
for sure.
Yeah, man. Thank you, man. I know you're on your lunch break.
Yeah. I appreciate you, my brother.
All right, man. I appreciate you too, bro. All right.